I'm here at the Rose Theatre, Kingston, with Artistic Director Stephen Unwin. Thank you for your time today. Now, it really is an impressive building here in the heart of Kingston, home to so many productions and the ever-popular Kingston Readers Festival, which we'll talk about in just a moment. But as a director, it really is about having a vision. What was your vision for this theatre space?
That's a very good question. Well, South West London does not have a large-scale theatrical centre. There are those in North London, North East London, but there isn't in South West London. The nearest, I suppose, would be the Lyric Hammersmith. So, at the very heart of this place is to serve not just Kingston, but this whole massive area all the way around us. The auditorium is this fantastic sort of big hug, I call it, big semicircular embrace. And that I think, captures what we're trying to do here, is that it is something, as a good theatre should be, something for everybody. At the centre of everything we do is our own homegrown productions, and we've done, I think, 12 of them. The famous one was Judi Dench in A Midsummer Night's Dream, but we've done Celia Imrie in Hay Fever, Tim West in The Winslow Boy, and so on, lots of others. But then we also bring in lots of visiting work. We have one-night events. We do a lot of talks. I've had talks with Alan Bennett, Patrick Stewart, Maureen Lipman, blah, 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 lots and lots of people like that. And one of the things that strikes me about that is what an appetite there is around here for people to come and hear people talk, not just about theatre, but broader culture. Which brings us on to the Readers' Festival, which is why I think the Readers' Festival is such a fantastic thing in its own right. And I'm so pleased that we're able to host some of the stuff here. And I'm always just struck by the eagerness of our audience for events like that.
It's yes.
Very gratifying.
It's a great festival. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Yeah. I'll just focus on the extraordinary building based on the Old Rose in Southwark.
Yeah.
It's was this mix of old and modern always the aim? Do you feel the plays that are chosen here reflect the building?
Well, it is absolutely not a museum piece, this building. It is, the ground plan is drawn from the Old Rose Theatre on the South Bank, which was Shakespeare's first theatre before they built the Globe. So it's drawn from that, but it is absolutely not a museum, and I wouldn't want it to be a museum. It's brilliant for presenting Shakespeare in, but what's striking is how good it is for presenting all sorts of stuff. The reason why actors like Judi Dench and so on want to come here is that you stand in the centre of that stage and everybody is close to you, and they're kind of in the palm of your hand, surrounding you. Whereas in a traditional theatre, it's sort of like looking through a letterbox, whereas here you're part of the action. And that makes it very, very exciting. That makes it very, makes it a wonderful place to work in.
Yeah, absolute dream for an actor to have that intimacy, but also that space as well. Now, talking of your meeting with Sir Peter Hall, sounds a most interesting one, and it certainly shows that the word spreads if you have a talent. Tell us about your first correspondence with Sir Peter Hall via the pigeonhole note.
Oh, that's just a funny thing. I mean, it's such a long time ago now, but yeah, I was at university, I was at Cambridge, and I got a letter, from Peter Hall when he was running the National Theatre, saying, I hear you're doing interesting work, will you come and see me? So I went to see him. He can't remember this at all, but then he was doing this all the time with, talented young kids. So I went along and I went to see him in his office in the National Theatre, one Thursday afternoon. As I say, he has no memory of it, why should he? Yeah. But I remember it very, very clearly.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's a real dream for an aspiring director and clearly the start of many great things. And I know there are many industry professionals who've been avid followers of your career and indeed many actors who know of your sterling work as Artistic Director of the English Touring Company and your work at the Traverse in Edinburgh. How different do you find it working within a touring company to a producing house?
Well, it's very different. I mean, a touring company, I mean, I set up and ran English Touring Theatre for 15 years, a very long time, actually, and you're taking work all out all over the country, means that it's quite hard to develop a close relationship with the audience, if you like. And one of the things that I love here is being here at 7:30 and watch the show go up, and seeing the audience come in and, I'm beginning to recognise quite a lot of people and they're beginning to know who I am, and which means that somebody comes up to me and says, that was absolutely awful, or that's great, or, But I like that contact with the audience. Sometimes it's bit tiring, but yes. Basically, I like that contact, and I think it's part of the job that you have that. I think the days of a theatre being just a place which just houses shows and does nothing else, I think those days are gone, and I think that theatres in the new world have to, and kind of rightly should have a participatory element, a connection. I mean, I can give you a little example. We're doing, we have here a group of local amateurs called sounds like a rude word, I'm not using it rude at all, called the Versophiles. And they're doing this thing is that over the years, they are reading through the complete works of Shakespeare, all right? And I've been to a couple of the readings that they do, which are really, really good. Anyway, so I said, well, do you want me to come and do a class? Because I've directed a lot of Shakespeare. So I'm going to go, in fact, tonight, I'm going to spend 2 hours with a group of local amateur actors, teaching them all that I know about speaking Shakespeare. Now, I think that's very, very important for the future. I mean, I think that's how theatres have to work and should work. And you can kind of draw strength from that. So that matters to me.
Mm. Certainly an interesting way of the versified. It's a good way of bringing, you know, Shakespeare up to date, keeping it modern, different take on it.
It's a way of... What I think it is more is that it's a way of saying that it belongs to everybody. It belongs to local people. It's not something that only, you know, Ian McKellen and Judi Dench can do. It's something which is part of our kind of broad bloodstream, you know, and they're retired people and they're people at work, they're young people, they're all sorts of people, you know, people who work in hospitals who care about Shakespeare and want to come and read it aloud. And I think that really matters. Mm. I think that's really, really wonderful. Mm. And stops it being the property of just of the professionals, you know.
Yes, that's sort of the way it was in Shakespeare's day, wasn't it, for the people? So it's kind of going full circle in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, you've directed over 50 professional plays and taken
over... Is that
over,
right?
You've been quoted. taking over 40 productions to theatres with the English Touring Company. But how did you feel about directing your very first play?
My very first play ever? I think I was a schoolboy. I think I directed my first play. I don't know quite how I got into it. There was a time when I wanted to be a painter, and then I realised I probably wasn't going to be very good as a painter, although I loved painting. And at the same time, I suddenly started reading a lot of books and loved words. And I thought maybe I should be a writer. And then I thought, no, that would be too lonely. Being a painter or being a writer would be too lonely. So somehow being a theatre director seemed to kind of bring all the things that I was most interested in. And it is the most wonderful job. I mean, of course, what I'm doing now is I'm both a play director, but I'm also the head of this theatre that we're sat in. So it's a kind of multiple job. Sometimes quite schizophrenic, if you see what I mean, because the artistic director bit of me says, well, let's just do something fantastic and beautiful and crazy. And then the chief executive bit of me goes, yeah, but then we'll be even poorer than we were before.
Yes.
So you're kind of, your head is kind of torn in different directions.
Many different heads needed, isn't it?
Too many different heads. That's why. You should tell your audience that you're sat in front of this old, bald man with grey hair, but when I started, it was long, blonde, curly locks.
That's why life in the theatre does for you.
Life in the theatre.
Well, I guess it's... I mean, many plays that we see on our stages today are adapted from novels, so it seems very apt that you have a very strong link with the Readers Festival. I believe this started back in 2002. Why is it particularly important for The Rose to be associated with this festival?
Well, I mean, The Rose stands for, not just for theatre, but for literacy and culture in the broader sense and language, which, you know, we turn our back on that and we're stuffed, it seems to me, as a society. So, you know, and the Rose is a centre for, a cultural centre for the whole town, all right, for the whole area. So the Readers' Festival is, you know, matters a lot. I love it. And one of the things I love about this country, actually, it sounds rather patriotic of me, but I am a bit, is the way that these Readers' Festivals, these festivals, literary festivals, happen all over the country. And I love the fact that there are these reading groups where people get together and read a book together and things. When people say, oh, nobody, you know, this country, everybody, all that anybody does is watch daytime TV. Well, you go on the tube and you see people reading books all the time.
and reading good books. And, you know, the publishing industry, I mean, I know it faces difficulties, but, you know, thousands of books are published all the time. So literary the Readers' Festival, which I think is a rather inspirational event, does have some of its events here. I mean, I'd love all its events to be here, but Sandy, who runs it, wants to make sure that it's all over the borough, which I completely respect. And they do a marvellous thing, is that the profits from the Readers' Festival, they give some of them to the Rose, so they help support the Rose. Mm. Not huge profits, it's got to be said, but it's they're very much part and parcel of the fight to make the place, you know, buzz.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you'll be appearing on stage talking about your new book, but just before we mention that, taking your position as an artistic director with Proceedings, you know, there's so much literary and dramatic talent out there, as you said. How do you go about selecting those pieces for the final programme? Must be hard.
Well, there are two different things. In terms of our own homegrown productions, you are trying to find plays which are worth doing, which audiences are going to enjoy, which may sell enough tickets, because we're a commercial theatre, really, which may sell enough tickets, which have some sort of artistic, cultural value, which you can afford to stage. So there are a whole series of different things that affect how you finally make the final choice. It's peculiar to do a play that everybody else is doing at the same time. So you're always working. It's all the art of the possible, really. I mean, you know, I've read hundreds of plays, and I could go, and there are dozens which I love. So, but we can't do for whatever reason, you know. So it's not just about what do I fancy. It's a much, much bigger thing. You know, it's like in business, putting a product out on the market. You know, you've got to have worked it out very carefully, what it is and how it's going to work, before you do that.
Yes, a lot of thought goes into these things. Now, many great actors know, particularly those who have that sight read really well, that at auditions, that the clues are in the material and they're given to you by the writer. You need to know how to look for those clues.
Yeah.
In your book, The Well-Read Play, what would you say your greatest advice on that subject is?
Well, my greatest advice is read it carefully. I mean, The Well-Read Play is a book which addresses the question of how to read a play. That a lot of people find reading plays very difficult. And what The Well-Read Play does as a book is it goes through, it asks a series of questions, a similar series of questions that I would ask when I pick up a play that's coming through the post. Who wrote it? Where does it come from? Not just what country does it come from, but what world does it come out of? Who's in it? Who are the characters in it? What do they say? What do they really say, and how do they say it? There's then a fascinating double question, which is, what happens in the play? And then you can ask a further question, is what really happens in the play, which is what we call the subtext. And then I think the last two chapters are called, Is It Any Good? Because you pick up a new play and ultimately you have to go, is it good or is it rubbish, you know, or is it somewhere in between? Is it any good? And then I say, and what's next for plays? Mm-hmm. I try and address that. So that's the structure of the book, is it asks very kind of fundamental questions. But the thing that I often find with, for example, with young theatre directors, is that they don't read it carefully enough. Or they don't read it with any sense of cultural context or history or, you know, those sorts of things, which are very important, it seems to me, because if you're going to read a 19th century play from Russia, well, what's 19th century Russia? You know, who was this writer? What was he trying to do? What can we find out? And I think that those issues affect the play a lot. They should inform how we read it, if you like. So the most important thing I would say is read it carefully. And don't jump to conclusions. I mean, this is a bigger beef I have about the way that literature is taught in schools and colleges at the moment. Is that I think that people are encouraged to come to conclusions before they've assembled the evidence, which I think is hopeless, because of the emphasis on because of the emphasis on creative response, on individual response, which I know matters, students are being asked to say what they think about Hamlet as opposed to read it carefully 10 times and read a whole load of other things, if you see what I mean.
Yes.
And it just seems to me that there's something a bit topsy-turvy at the moment.
Yes, you need to really explore, don't you, and research before drawing your conclusions too soon.
Yeah, well, and you can sort of, ultimately, if you like, you can draw a tentative conclusion. So, you know, 30 years on, I've got some, I'm coming to some very, very tentative conclusions about what I think about Hamlet, having directed it twice and written about it and da-da-da-da. You know, I go around saying that I think Hamlet is probably a sort of an experimental play, a young man's experimental piece of writing. I only have come to that conclusion very, very, very slowly, and almost certainly will be overturned next week. You know, yes. When I suddenly realise, no, it's not experimental at all. It's perfectly formed and completely controlled. You know.
I guess the wonderful thing is it's ever evolving, and whichever day and year you look at it, you could draw a different conclusion.
I mean, with Shakespeare, the more history I read, and the more I read the stuff about the background, the world from which it came, the more that I understand it, the closer I get. My understanding of Shakespeare is as limited as anybody else's. But that's what I think that people need to develop. It's like detective work.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, it's the clues, isn't it?
Clues. And I think that plays are slightly different from novels, because in a novel, the writer tells you so much, whereas a play... In a play, the writer tells you less, because there's this thing called dramatic action that's going on.
It's very complex. You can see why you need to write a book about it.
Exactly. What is striking is how very, very... I mean, my father, who's an extremely intelligent man, said to me... I remember years ago, he said to me... he doesn't work in the theatre at all. He said, I just don't understand how you read a play. He said, I tried to once. I just can't begin. And it's very striking that people can't begin, because they can't hear... I think what he said, something like, he couldn't hear the different voices, okay, speaking. So that the weird thing about a play is that person A says one thing, person B says something different. Whereas in a novel or in a poem, quite often, there's the writer speaking.
Yes.
Doesn't speak. I mean, Shakespeare, he completely doesn't speak. Where's he gone? You can't find the writer at all.
Yes.
Which is part of what's so brilliant about it. But it's also what's so frustrating, because you want to say, come on, will you just tell me what you think?
You wish you could just sit him down there and say, come on, explain.
It's gone, it's disappeared.
It's not good, is it? Not very helpful for him. But I've got to say, I mean, so many great plays that you revisit here at the Rose. You say Noel Coward's Hay Fever, starring Celia Imrie, many Shakespeare's, but... I believe you discuss this in the book. What's your view on theatre's place in today's day and age?
Well, what I think about theatre... What do I think about theatre? I think there's a funny problem at the moment, which is if theatre is going to be really about now, concerned with now, then it has to be about new writing, new plays. Now, you know, I love going to the National Gallery, and I love looking at 16th century Italian Renaissance paintings, but they're not about now, and I know they're not. They're about another world. They're incredibly beautiful, and I love them. But you can't say that Piero della Francesca is a painter for today. He's a painter for then. It's so beautiful that it somehow still works in some strange way. So I think that the theatre, if it's going to really address now, needs to be about new writing, you know, the person actually writing about what's happening right now, modern experience. The problem is that television is trying to do that, all sorts of other people are trying to do that, and the other problem is that we have this huge dramatic inheritance, which is so marvellous, and so many great plays of the past, particularly in the English language, actually. And that, you know, Noel Coward's Hay Fever is still incredibly entertaining. But I can't pretend that Noel Coward's Hay Fever is about living in 2011. It's not. And that's not its fault. But we sort of, I kind of slightly, this is why I think there is a value in understanding history and culture, and, you know, we go, well, isn't that extraordinary that Coward Say Fever, written in 1920, whatever it was, can be so funny and alive? But you make it alive by understanding the world in which it came from, which is a strange paradox. So, Hay Fever, if you understand that there was this movement in the 20s towards kind of bohemian living, which was a reaction to the grimness of the First World War, and people were going, you know, they were sort of having sex with inappropriate people, they were being artistic, they were doing different kinds of lives, you then see what that family is at the heart of Hay Fever, which is it's a bunch of bohemians. And then you see that the visitors are people coming into contact with complete, very conventional people coming up against very, very unconventional bohemian living. And so you get the energy of it. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like stuffy people going to Greenwich Village in 1965, you know, going, what is going on? You find the energy of it. You find the energy of it by understanding the difference, which I think is a strange paradox, but I think is true. Whereas I think if you just say Judith Bliss is exactly like somebody here today, they're not. She's not. Which is why I'm not sure about Universal anymore. I think things are of their time. I think by virtue of being of their time, if you understand the time, then they're fun. They're interesting.
Yes.
Do you see what I mean?
Yes, definitely. There's a difference between, like you're just saying, Noel Coward's Hay Fever, new writing for itself, and also, say, Richard III interpreted by Ian McKellen, transporting it to the Third Reich.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's taking a modern slant, which could allow itself, it can suggest itself.
Yeah, it can suggest itself.
Ways,
yeah. So I think the theatre is, the theatre has, for 150 years, people have said, oh, it's dying, but it seems to keep staggering on. Reports of its death are much exaggerated.
Yes.
There will continually be debates, there always have been, between the quote-unquote traditionalists and the moderns. My view of approaching an old play is, well, go back to the National Gallery. When you look at a very old painting which has got 30 layers of varnish off on it, all right, if you clean the varnish off, you suddenly see that the colours are as bright as your top. They're amazing. Whereas the varnish, everything that's gone on top of it, and the dust and the smoke and everything, has made it all go dusty. So I love that thing about rediscovering its original power, its original brightness and energy, a living quality. But that's what I think staging an old play today, that's what part of what the task is not to paint a red nose on it, but instead to go, God, look at all this, let's clear the junk off.
Yes, it's like having a really good restoration job, isn't
it? It's like a really good restoration job, that's what I love. And in a way, my book, The Well-Read Play, is sort of helping, it's a way of saying, look, how might we go about that? So when you read it, how do you... I mean, I love the movement in classical music now of playing it on original instruments and so on, and I think that's fascinating what it releases, and you suddenly go, this is all slightly different than I thought it was, but it's more powerful.
Absolutely, yeah. Scraping away all the layers, seeing it for what it really is, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, for anyone who's got a fascination with the theatre, enjoys debate on the subject, like we've been talking, or looking for any clues as a performer, The Well-Read Play certainly sounds
a
great book. Even though you say so modestly.
Yeah, of course, it's a masterpiece.
So where can people get hold of a copy of this great book?
I'm doing this talk here, and they'll be on sale then. And I think they're in all good bookshops, and on the Oberon Books website as well. It's on that as well. You can order it there.
Books.
Oberonbooks.com.
Fantastic. Yeah. And of course, you'll be here doing the talk at 1 p.m. on Monday, 23rd of May, which is fantastic. Yes. So it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, Stephen, find out your take on the theatre. You did a wonderful job here at the Rose Theatre, and look forward to reading the play.
Great.
Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
And that was Stephen Unwin, author of The Well-Read Play and artistic director of the Rose Theatre in Kingston.